Hazard Audio.
This week on Sports Appeal, Johnny Five stands in alongside Matt Axelrod as the two go over the NBA playoffs and the continuing developing story around Deflategate and the Patriots. Also on deck, we've got Sports Madness with Sadiq Faruqi, special call-in guest for that, and Steve Gross makes his return after the Tweet Zone. It's all right here.
Recorded live at the Launchpad Studios in Chicago, Sports Appeal.
This is gonna be a home run! I just know it! Because I can see into the future.
With your hosts, Steve Gross and Matt Axelrod. Play ball.
Yeah, welcome to Sports Appeal. My name is Johnny Five, producer and fill-in host for this week. And we've got Matt Axelrod right here. Matt, how you feeling?
Feeling great. Can't wait to record.
All righty. Well, here we are. We're getting it to you right here, right now. You can get to us every week at podbean.com. Just search for Sports Appeal. You can also do the same with iTunes. We are on there as well. Make sure you subscribe, listen, show us some love, and write us a nice review. We've got a lot of things cooking with iTunes right now, so you can always reach us through there. We are also available through a bunch of other ways. No matter which way you're getting to us, we appreciate you tuning in. Tweet us at the Sports Appeal, and you can find your tweet on the Tweet Zone right here. All of our music is provided by Full Service, our studio band. All of their music can always be found on iTunes and Spotify and their YouTube music channel, Full Service Music. The show is produced by myself, Johnny Five, and powered by Hazard Audio. We've got a lot of great stories for you this week. We're going to be talking about the NBA playoffs. We'll be doing a bit of a recap for that. Deflategate, it's back, and back in a big way. So we've got that for you. Of course, the Tweet Zone and Sports Madness. But first on the docket, Matt, we've got the NBA playoffs.
The three series that I thought were going to be the most competitive were all done in six, which is still a fairly competitive series. And the one series that looked like it was going to be over in five with the Clippers winning decisively is actually about to go to game seven, which starts in a couple hours. It will have happened by the time this episode drops.
Complete turnaround, total reversal. Do you think a lot of people saw this coming, or is it just totally flipping everything?
Not when this series started. The Clippers looked utterly dominant for the first four games of the series, but I mean, the Rockets are the higher seed, so it's not terribly surprising that they're playing better. The Clippers just beat the Spurs in a series nobody thought they were going to win and really looked like they were on a roll. They seem to have faltered a little bit since then, though. And the Rockets, who, you know, in a couple of those games that they lost, it looked like they stopped trying, and it really looked like they just didn't have the mojo that it would take to win. In terms of the actual matchups, I think they're two very evenly matched teams in terms of talent. So I'm glad it's going to seven.
If you had to make a prediction for who comes out on top and which two teams face each other, do you think you could make that now accurately?
Yeah, I think the Clippers are still going to win. The Rockets are on a roll. They've won two in a row. But I just think that the Clippers are the better all-around team, and they're definitely better coached. I'd take Doc Rivers over Kevin McHale any day.
You heard it here first. Doc Rivers over
Kevin McHale.
Let's fast forward to what the matchups look like next year.
Yeah, I think that the New Orleans Pelicans, who were an 8 seed this year and were knocked out in four games, are going to be pretty good next year. I think they'll be at least like a 5 seed, even in the loaded West. And there are a couple reasons for that prediction. Now, we'll talk more about the Tom Thibodeau situation later, but it looks like Tom Thibodeau is likely to hit the market either as a free agent coach, in which case the Bulls would have fired him, or the Bulls might trade him. So I think he's going to end up in New Orleans, and I think that that's just a phenomenal situation for him.
Why wait? Let's drill down into it now. What is up with Thibodeau, and what's going to happen to him? I mean, bringing it back home to the Bulls, things aren't looking good.
No, they are not at all. So Tom Thibodeau has been one of the best regular season coaches in NBA history. Up until this year, he had the best record of any rookie coach, and he's the fastest coach to 100 wins in the regular season. He's been underwhelming in the playoffs, and that's for a few reasons. Number one, he's not very good offensively. He coaches a great defense, but he doesn't seem to make good adjustments in-game, especially on the offensive end. And then the other issue is minutes management, and that's really the big one that Bulls management has had trouble with him. He's really butted heads with the general manager and team president, John Paxson and Gar Forman. From all media reports, they are at their wits' end with him, especially after this year.
I remember hearing a lot of grumblings about this time management issue, even from way out before the playoffs ever started. Break that down a little bit. What's with the management in minutes and with resting his players and everything that's going on, and why do people start to see it so early and call him out on it?
Well, so Tom Thibodeau is really an old school kind of guy. Back in the day, every star player and a lot of even role players would play 38 to 40 some minutes a game. No one really does that anymore. And it's been shown, especially this year, that teams then have more success when they're only playing guys like 35 minutes a game max, because then their best players are fresh and rested throughout the whole game, and they're not just gassed. And you could see that a lot in these playoffs. Jimmy Butler just looked gassed, especially in some of the later games in this series, because he's trying to defend LeBron James, the best player in the world, and then also go out and score 20-plus points on the offensive end. And it's just too difficult to ask, even of a great athlete who's in peak physical condition like Jimmy Butler, especially when you have someone like Tony Snell who can come off the bench and spell him. Tony Snell's been really up and down. He's had some really good games this year. He's also had some really bad games this year. But one thing that he has been able to do is play good defense, especially on LeBron James. In fact, there was a game earlier this season when Jimmy Butler was out with an injury and Tony Snell guarded LeBron, held him to around 40% from the floor, forced him into 8 turnovers.
Holy cow.
And just, like, took his lunch money. He seriously, like, played as well in that game as LeBron did, if not better, because he shot way better from the floor than LeBron did. So it's super frustrating for me to see these guys who are really good players, Jimmy Butler and up until this year, Joakim Noah, just get run into the ground, and it's probably taking years off of their career, or at least years of productive play. That's the lowdown on the minute situation.
Before we get too far along into it, we got to take some time out and respect the tweet zone.
Tweet zone. Hit the tweets.
Alrighty, we got a couple of tweets for the Tweet Zone. Of course, you could reach us at the Sports Appeal. Get your tweet read on the Tweet Zone. We love interacting with you guys. The hosts are very, very good about getting back to you, tweeting with you guys, so make sure you make that happen. But first one is coming in from at CharlesMedley13, and he's asking us, which team is going to be a favorite to be the best team in the NBA in the 2015-2016 season?
I have to go with the Cleveland Cavaliers. They were pretty good this year despite dealing with a lot of chemistry issues. They're going to shore some things up in the offseason. LeBron James is still there. And then they've got Kyrie Irving, who's just going to keep getting better. I think Kevin Love's probably gone. Regardless of whether he's there or not, they're going to, I mean, that's going to be a big free agent destination. They might end up keeping him,
sure,
which he was a little underwhelming for them this season because he's trying to adapt to being the third fiddle instead of the number one guy on a team. But he was still a very good player for them and made them better. Even if not, I mean, the front office made some great moves. Though I say the front office, I have a very strong suspicion LeBron James is essentially the de facto general manager and coach of that team at this point.
Yeah, not a far reach to make.
I think he essentially told the front office, hey, you guys go get me Iman Shumpert, go get me J.R. Smith, and go get me Timofey Mozgov. And those moves worked out extraordinarily well for them, whoever was responsible.
Yeah, that plays exactly into what my next question was going to be. Do you think he knows what he's talking about? Do you think he has the capability to make it happen, even in a general leadership position like that?
Without a doubt, yeah.
LeBron's got it down.
LeBron has shown throughout his career that he knows how to bring the right players together, really just in the last several years. Because, I mean, look at what he did in Miami. A lot of the times when you bring together a bunch of star players like that, it doesn't work out well. Well, LeBron knows which ones to bring in. And not even necessarily star players, also role players. Look at what he did in Cleveland. The Cavs were 20-21, and then they made that flurry of moves. And since then, they went on to have the second best record in the East.
Just crush it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think if you give him a full offseason, whether Love stays or goes, you give him a full offseason to work his magic and figure out the right players to bring in and do his wheedling job and convince them to come in. Plus, David Blatt is not an overwhelming success there. The general thought is that David Blatt's going to be gone because LeBron's basically just been calling the plays anyway. Now they'll get to hire the coach that LeBron wants them to hire, and that's going to be a good thing for them too. It's time to hand over the reins of the direction of this franchise to LeBron James, and he's shown that he is a fantastic steward.
That leads into one last question before we plow forward with our next tweet in the Tweet Zone. And the question is, you think LeBron has a decent post-professional basketball career lined up for him as maybe doing office-type stuff, coaching-type stuff?
I think so. I mean, if he wants to. He can do whatever he wants to do after his playing career. He can do nothing if he wants to because he's got
the money, yeah.
Especially with this current deal, and then his next deal is going to be massive after the salary cap jumps.
Oh, man.
I think if he wants to be a GM after he retires, he absolutely could do that. If he wants to be a coach after he retires, he could do that too. Whatever he wants to do, especially in the basketball world, the door is open for him.
The guy's a phenom.
He really is. He's just incredible.
He's got it down. Moving right along, and this is going to lead into our next segment, but before we get to it.
At Patriots Nation with two N's at the end, tweeted out complaining about the sentence on Tom Brady and the Patriots being based on the Wells report, only saying that they were probably responsible, to which Sports Appeal tweeted out, probably is usually more than enough. Just ask your friend Aaron Hernandez.
Right, of course, referencing Aaron Hernandez's circumstantial evidence, and that was even enough to bring him down.
Exactly.
And so our tweet that we're actually going to be talking about is from at Dad Midwaste, and he's saying, headline should have been, no proof, but seriously, how do they not know?
So yeah, exactly. Like, you have enough from this Wells report and from everything that went down that you know that, at least I'm perfectly satisfied, that the Patriots, or at least Tom Brady, were responsible for the deflation of these footballs intentionally and against league rules.
Especially when you get into some of the data evidence, which we'll be talking about in just a little bit. But right now, we're out of time. We got to take it to break. And then we're actually going to go on a search. We're going to find Steve Gross and bring him back into the fold to talk about Deflategate. It's all right here on Sports Appeal.
Fantasy sports fans are winning huge cash prizes every day at DraftKings.com. Last year, $300 million were won, and you could be the next to win big. Go to DraftKings.com now and enter promo code HAZARD to play for free. That's HAZARD for free entry now at DraftKings.com.
Hey, welcome back to Sports Spiel. On the Tweet Zone just a minute ago, we were talking about the Deflategate and the Wells report. We got Steve Gross on the phone, co-host of the show, to talk about that a little bit more with us. So, Steve, the Wells report came out. First, I want to say some of our longtime listeners may remember us talking about how everybody was talking about Deflategate, and we just thought it was so stupid because we didn't know anything. Well, the report's out, and now we know some stuff. Got some thoughts on this?
Do we know stuff? That's my thought on it. Like, I don't know. It's not really that conclusive, if you ask me. I mean, there's some stuff about maybe this happened, maybe that happened. The guy called himself the deflator, and that's about it. I mean, you know, there's some bogus readings with bad gauges, and I mean, it certainly looks bad for Tom Brady and for the Patriots. It certainly looks like they did this.
You got some pretty conclusive texts from Tom Brady.
The texts from Brady, all they really said was, I liked the ball underinflated. Dude, give me a call. He never actually told them, take it below the limit.
Yeah, you don't really have a smoking gun here. But some of these texts between these McNally and Jastrzemski guys are pretty damning for them. Definitely strongly suggests that Tom wanted the footballs below a certain level and that they were trying to do it against the influence of the referees.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. That certainly looks bad. And the text between the two ball boys certainly looks damning. There's no doubt about that. It's just, I don't know. I don't know if there's enough for fine, a suspension, draft picks. It seems like way too much for something that we're frankly uncertain about.
You think the NFL is reaching then with this conclusion that they've come up with and, you know, with these penalties and this suspension that they've levied against the guy?
I think they're trying to send a message. You know, the Patriots have been under a lot of scrutiny for cheating and for bending the rules. And it just, the best analogy for this that I've heard is, This is like a parking ticket violation, but you get enough parking tickets, eventually you're going to get a bigger fine. So I think that's what the NFL is trying to do. I think they're trying to tell the Patriots, like, we've had enough of this crap of you guys skirting the edges and just trying to break all the rules, bend the rules in your favor. So knock it off or you're going to get banged.
See, I want to take it back a second. You were saying that just because they were not sure about whether or not this happened, that they shouldn't have as much of a penalty. I don't think I agree with that. Because, I mean, this is essentially based off of a standard legal procedure. They're trying to model this after the legal system as much as possible. So in the legal system, take the Aaron Hernandez case. Aaron Hernandez probably did it. They were able to tell beyond a reasonable doubt that he was guilty of killing that guy. You know, say they're 85% sure. They don't give him 85% of a sentence because of that. once you reach the threshold under the law or the procedures that they're using in this case, then you give them the full sentence. You have to separate those two issues.
Yeah, but, you know, what have the penalties been for this kind of violation in the past? The Vikings and Panthers got caught under inflating balls, and they didn't get penalized at all. They just got a warning.
Yeah, I think it really is just because the Patriots have such a long history of doing this kind of stuff. The league is just trying to bring down the hammer on them, like, hey, stop cheating. So, like, taken just in a vacuum, all of this looks ridiculous. A first-round and a fourth-round draft pick, $1 million from the team, and a four-game suspension for Brady himself. Each of those things in and of themselves seems extreme. But you've got to consider, if it actually stops them from cheating, is it worth it?
Right, yeah. And then there's also the deterrence factor, like trying to stop other teams from doing this. Because I'm, like, 90% sure Tom Brady and the Patriots are not the only people doing this. They just are the only ones who got caught for it. So I think that's probably another factor, too. They don't want teams to try to break this rule, so they're coming down really hard to try to prevent that in the future.
My favorite thing about this whole thing was the Patriots statement trying to explain all these text evidence away. One of these guys is referred to, this McNally guy is referred to as the deflator.
The deflator!
Yeah.
Yeah, the Patriots claim that he's called the deflator because he's trying to lose weight. He's deflating.
Ridiculous. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Like, it sounds like a kid who got caught lying and then just trying to cover it up with another lie. It just gets worse and worse.
Right, he's shooting as he goes. And then talk to us a little bit about Tom Brady's agent and how many favors he's doing for his client right now with all the conspiracy theories that he's spewing forth. This guy Yee, what is up with this?
I don't know. Like, accusing the NFL of running a sting operation and all that. First of all, it was not a sting operation. And secondly, even if it was, so what? I mean, the guy was breaking the rules. They wanted to catch him breaking the rules. I don't really have an issue with that whatsoever. His agent needs to just stop talking about this right now until the lawyers handle it.
Should he be fired?
I guess I'd probably fire him.
Think of the implications of what he's saying. Because essentially what he's saying is the league should have told Brady and the Patriots that they knew we were cheating so that we wouldn't get caught cheating.
Let us know that you know so we can stop doing it so you can't catch it.
Yeah, it's great. Just doing a great job as his agent there.
Yeah, it's just more Patriots entitlement and Tom Brady entitlement. It's getting out of control.
Well, we miss you, Steve. We're glad that we could have you on for this segment of the show. We'll see you next week when you come on back, all right?
All right, appreciate you guys calling.
The Patriots have been accused of cheating, have been caught cheating in various ways over the years. The NFL is coming down on them, making an example out of them. It kind of adds up, makes sense to me. But yeah, you're saying that given all the evidence, what other teams have done, it doesn't really seem fair. It doesn't seem like the appropriate way to go.
Well, yeah, I don't care about the evidence issue at all. Because it looks to me, I'm satisfied that it is more probable than not, which is the standard that the league is applying here. More probable than not. I'm satisfied that that standard has been met personally. So then you have to separate the sentencing from what the amount of evidence shows once you reach that standard.
Sure.
On the other hand,
I mean, you think they're guilty, right?
Yes, I definitely think they're guilty.
Agreed.
On the other hand, there is the legitimate issue that this sentence is completely out of proportion with other sentences for other teams that have been caught doing this and similar things. Like, a couple years ago, another team was caught heating footballs on the sidelines. You're not allowed to do that either, and it's a very similar type of offense, and they weren't punished at all.
We are going to actually take it to a break real quick, and then we'll be back with sports madness and more craziness right here on Sports Abuse.
Hey guys, it's Steve here. I know a lot of you have been wanting to try out DraftKings.com. Now is the perfect chance to do that. Fantasy sports fans are winning huge cash prizes every day at DraftKings.com, America's favorite place to play daily fantasy sports. Daily fantasy means no season-long commitments. You just play whenever you want, pick your sport, draft your team. It's like a new season every time you play, so you're never stuck with the same players. Last year, $300 million were won at DraftKings.com, and you could be the next to win big. Go to DraftKings.com now and enter promo code HAZARD to play for free. That's HAZARD for free entry now at DraftKings.com.
Hey, welcome back. It's Sports Appeal, and we've got our last segment of the show for you, and we brought on a special guest. First off, it's Sports Madness. Matt, are you ready for Sports Madness?
Always.
Sports Madness.
Alrighty, so for Sports Madness, we have Sadiq Faruqi on the line. Sadiq is an old broadcasting buddy back from our Radio Hofstra days, WRHU. and a sports aficionado extraordinaire and expert broadcaster. Sadiq, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
That was the most kind and generous introduction I've ever received at any level of broadcasting ever, so I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I'm good, ready to go. You guys seem ready to go as well.
Starting off with our first sports madness story, the Cubs and the Pirates, they've got a deja vu play. Matt, why don't you break down what exactly happened?
It was such a weird game. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. Cubs were up 7-1, blow that. Then they're up 10-5, and they blow that. 10-10 in the bottom of the 10th inning. Cubs have bases loaded, one out. Starlin Castro on third base and Matt Caesar at the plate. Matt Caesar hits a little blooper into right field, which their right fielder, Gregory Polanco, easily catches. Starlin Castro goes, gets thrown out at the plate. Two innings later, bases loaded, one out. Starlin Castro on third base, Matt Caesar up. Identical situation. The other two guys on base were even the same. Matt Caesar hits another blooper to Gregory Polanco in right field. Polanco is coming in, routine fly ball. He trips and falls on his face and kind of flails at the ball with his non-glove hand.
This just goes back to the, you know, wackiness of the Chicago Cubs, especially this year, and you look at all the expectations, and then you look at the that hitter-friendly park of yours. Anything can happen in that park. You have this wacky set of two innings, and I mean, you're watching and you're saying to yourself, no, this is not going to happen again. No, hey, Matt Caesar up again. Hey, what's going on, Matt? Hey, Jorge Soler is going to be walked with the bases loaded. No way. And then you're saying to yourself, all right, this just goes back to anything and everything that you say about Wrigley Field, about the Cubs, about the first shoe falling, and then they win the game, and then you say to yourself, wait a second, you know, it's not be so bad after all. You have this talented roster. You have Chris Bryant. You have Dexter Fowler. You have Jorge Soler. You have Anthony Rizzo. You have Starlin Castro. What are you complaining about? Life's good.
You know, I've been a Cubs fan my entire life, and I knew in my bones when they gave up that lead, especially when the Pirates scored that 10th run to tie it up in the top of the 9th inning, I knew that that was going to be it. They were going to blow the game, and they came close to it, but they got lucky on that one.
I'm coming from the perspective of a Mets fan. You saw the way that they hung in there with the first place team in the NL East. They came in there, they dominated the game they had to dominate, they got to the Mets' strong pitching rotation, and then they took advantage in the fourth game of a series of Mets errors. And when is the last time you've seen this from the Chicago Cubs? When is the last time you can honestly say, all right, a game in which they're down 4-0, that they were ever going to find ways to come back to scratch and claw their way back into a game, or take advantage of the opposing team's errors? And that's something that they did. And if you didn't walk away from that series saying to yourself, all right, we actually have something here, you have that reinforced when you're going up against a team in the Pittsburgh Pirates, a team that has really established themselves as a quasi-perennial powerhouse in the Central, in the National League. And I think you're onto something now. I think that this young talent that Theo Epstein has put together, it's starting to come to fruition. He had a plan when he came here, what was it, 3 years ago? And you're starting to see it bear fruit, and now you're starting to see a team that's on the rise.
Yeah. There you go. Sadiq Farooqui bottom lining it. And speaking of bottom lining it, we got room for one more sports madness story. We're going to take it right here. So we've got Paul Pierce of the Wizards playing the Hawks, and Paul Pierce, with 8 seconds to go, he drains it when the team is down 2 points for a three-pointer, puts them up one with 8 seconds to go. And it's at that point in the game that he decides to turn around to the other team and say, series, as in they got the series and it's done. And, of course, what happens right afterwards? They come back and they win it.
Yep, they win it, and then they won the next game. So the Hawks ended up winning that series, and the Wizards didn't take another game.
But you know what? When it comes to Paul Pierce, and if you saw the game last night, there really isn't anything more you could say about Paul Pierce. The guy is an old-school competitor. And you know what? I would rather have someone come in, hit a shot, talk smack, but then be able to back it up. In this day and age of the NBA, the problem is the players are way too buddy-buddy with one another. This isn't like the mid-90s where players, teams hated one another. The Knicks and Miami Heat, they hated one another. Your Chicago Bulls and Ewing Knicks hated one another. Why? Because Michael Jordan is the reason that Patrick Ewing doesn't have at least 3 championship rings. And that's what it was all about. Yes, you had rivalries. That's what you had, people throwing each other on the floor. That's what you had, a culture where you could not drive to the hoop without getting fouled and fouled hard and thinking about it the next time you wanted to drive to the hoop. The You don't have that anymore. Now you have players who are all like, well, he's such a great player, and I respect his game, but I think we're going to do okay in this upcoming series. Who wants to see that anymore? You have a guy in Paul Pierce nicknamed the Truth. Why is he the Truth? He speaks the truth, and he backs his game up with the truth. If you saw the end of that game last night, Paul Pierce, in only a way that Paul Pierce could, hit what should have been, or what could have been, rather, the game-tying three-pointer, which would have sent the game to overtime.
At the buzzer, no less.
At the buzzer. Now, granted, he held onto the ball a millisecond too long, and that's why the shot was overturned, and Atlanta goes on to the Eastern Conference Finals, where, by the way, I do think they're going to defeat the Cleveland Cavaliers, a.k.a. the Cleveland Knicks. But when you look at what Paul Pierce represents, Paul Pierce represents a guy who will get in your face, tell you, I am going to score the next trip down, and there is not a single thing you're going to be able to do about it. He is the kind of guy that's going to tell you, hey, I am going to cross you up right. I am going to take a shot from that spot on the floor. You could stand there right now. You're still not going to be able to take the shot. And you know what? I would rather take that any day over somebody coming in a post-game conference saying, well, we played well, they played well, but there only had to be one winner. I like the fact that Paul Pierce still brings it. He brings the talk, but he's able to back it up. And if not for releasing the ball millisecond late, we'd be talking about a game seven between Washington and Atlanta.
I wish we had had it too, because this was probably my favorite series of all of the second round series.
You could say the same about Clippers and Houston, and obviously, you know, Houston, many people went to sleep at the end of the third quarter thinking, all right, you know what, the Clippers are going to advance to the Western Conference Finals. They got this game in the bag. And then Houston goes on this 19-10 run, closes the gap, wins the game late, and now they have game seven. You know what? It's been a fun playoff. San Antonio Clippers was a fun playoff series. You know, Cleveland and Chicago could have been a lot better, but Chicago is very banged up. I think you now have to signal a transition for the Chicago Bulls, because I don't think Derrick Rose is ever going to be the same player again. And even if he was, you can't rely on him as a great player, because he's not a great player. He's a great scorer who has moments. He's not a high-percentage shooter. He's someone who can get to the hoop, but he is not someone that's going to be able to defend at a high level now, especially given his injuries. And you really have to start to wonder, how does this team go forward? Thibodeau, I doubt, is going to be back, and there's already talk about Tom Thibodeau wanting to coach New Orleans and Anthony Davis. So you can pretty much say that that's the end of that relationship. Jimmy Butler is going to get a max offer from the Los Angeles Lakers. He might get a prime offer from the Knicks as well. So, you know, the idea that Chicago is now going to match that with a max contract, I don't think they're going to.
There's no doubt in my mind that the Bulls are going to match that max offer. Jimmy's absolutely getting max offers. The Bulls would be so stupid not to match it. Not only that, they've come out and said that they're paying him a max deal. So Jimmy Butler will still be in Chicago. But I think you're right. Tom Thibodeau's gone.
I need to see that, though. I need to see that. I really need to see because they have to go under a lot of reevaluation of this roster now. If you look at Pau Gasol, how much can you expect out of him? He's old. He's way past his prime. And Tony Snell, what is he giving you? When you drafted Tony Snell, you thought, all right, that's our nice Jimmy Butler. It hasn't panned out because you didn't know what Jimmy Butler was at that point. Now Jimmy Butler is a superstar. I'm not a superstar, but he's a star. But what is Jimmy Butler? I don't know if I see Jimmy Butler as a cornerstone franchise player. He's a very good player. He is borderline a great player. I don't know if, you know, with how wide open the Eastern Conference is going to be next year, if you're, you know, long-term max contract with Jimmy Butler. But that aside, there has to be serious concerns about what Derrick Rose is going to be going forward. There has to be serious questions about what Pau Gasol is going to be. And what's the direction now? Do you now try to develop Nikola Mirotic? Is that the direction? I mean, he's a good player, but is that who you're going to start to lean upon? I think the Bulls have a lot of questions. Bulls have a ton of questions, but, you know, that just goes to the overall point of the Eastern Conference next year. Chicago, you don't know what they're going to be. Atlanta's going to be better. Miami, they may not be able to sign Goran Dragic. Indiana might be a little better. But, you know, who's the top in the Eastern Conference? LeBron's not going to be LeBron forever. LeBron's going to at some point start to age into just being a great player and not necessarily LeBron. So there's going to be a lot of wide open stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see what these teams do in the offseason.
We're going to answer these questions and more when we get a chance next week on the next Sports Appeal, when Steve Gross will be back with the show. We've got a lot more for you then. But make sure you guys tweet us at The Sports Appeal. My name is Johnny Five, producer and fill-in co-host, alongside
Matt Axelrod
and Sadiq Farooqui, right here calling in for Sports Madness. It's been an epic show, guys. I want to thank you both so much for doing it and making it happen. It is Sports Appeal. We're on podbean.com. You can find us on iTunes and a bunch of other ways as well. The Rivet News Radio app, sportsmecca.com, WGT Radio, Stitcher app. We've got so many ways for you to jam. There's no excuse not to. But right now, we got to take it on out. This is Full Service with Trumpets. I'm a sucker for a beat. I'm a human and I have my feet. Leave, leave, pay, leave me. When I shake off everything. Woogie, 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 woogie.
Hazard Audio.